and welcome to, believe it or not, episode 40 of the 905er podcast with me, Roland Tanner.
I am Joel McLeod.
And it's our usual Thursday episode where we sometimes do a bit of reflection on the episode from earlier in the week, and we'll certainly be doing that and some other stories that are going on around the 905 region that maybe deserve some more attention. So on Thursday, we were speaking to Sarah Buchanan from Environmental Defence about the proposed 413 highway, which is a kind of a new semi-orbital road around Toronto to add to the road that we have already around Toronto in the 407, which was itself another road to add to the 401 that also goes around Toronto. And the arguments for why the decision to bring this highway back from the dead are, let's say, at the very least, controversial. So, Joel, I think we probably made our position fairly clear in the episode on Tuesday, but this is a big deal, isn't it?
It is. I mean, we're talking billions of dollars spent on infrastructure that is highly questionable as to its usefulness, let alone forget the environmental impact. There was one thing that you and I didn't mention on our Tuesday episode, but it might be a bit relevant. Back in our political action days, I was a campaign manager for the local Liberal candidate here in Burlington, and we actually ran a campaign on spending money at hospitals over highways, because this was on the table back then. We wanted to prevent the highway from being built at the time, and we wanted to see the money spent on our local hospital instead. We did win, but I mean, this has been on the books for a long, long time. The previous Liberal government had it on file to look at. They ultimately, as we discussed, turfed the idea. But I mean, it kind of goes down to like this kind of lack of imagination in this province of, oh, we're having congestion woes. Okay, let's just build another highway. Well, we're kind of running out of practical places to build highways around the 905 region. It's getting a little bit ridiculous, in my opinion.
And we forget how bloody ugly these things are. It's not that long ago that this was virgin countryside, the First Nations had for millennia untouched. And, you know, in a couple of hundred years, we've really made a mess of it. And it's like, you know, cities and built up areas and business and people making a living, these are all great things. They don't have to look like a 6-lane, 12-lane highway.
No, they don't.
Jammed from end to end. We've got to be more imaginative than this.
Well, I mean, the last major highway built in this area was the 407, which we discussed. I used to drive the 407 in Mississauga frequently. It is empty. I've never, you know, compared to the 401 or the QEW, it is an empty stretch of highway. Like, nobody drives it. It's underused. And the problem is the previous Tory government, under Mike Harris and Ernie Eves, sold this piece of real estate to private enterprise because, oh, you have to privatize everything. Government shouldn't own anything and whatever. And it's just, it has turned into the worst deal ever in Canadian history. This thing makes billions of dollars for, I don't even know who owns it now, some Dutch conglomerate, I think, in Europe owns the primary stake in it. But it is, I mean, this thing is not for public use. The tolls are exorbitant. There's nothing special around it. You just get on it, you drive, and you get off at a certain roadway to go into either Mississauga or Brampton, but there's no, like, nothing special about it, but it's always empty. There's never anybody on it, and it's clearly underused. And that's one of the things we talked about, was getting either tractor trailers, transport trucks onto it to drive around the 905 if they need to, if they're going past this region onward, eastward or westward. But that's a solution. And then we would free up more traffic on the 401 and the QEW roadways. But this idea of just, well, we need to build, we got congestion, let's just build another highway. It's ludicrous. Absolutely ludicrous.
Oh, yeah. And we do have this road that is still underutilized, but which makes a great deal of money for the company that owns it with a 99-year lease. And I'm just reading off Wikipedia here as I talk. I kind of feel like I tripped over a really important point during a conversation with Sarah that had never occurred to me before. And that's, why don't we just buy back that highway? And yeah, we know that back in 2003, when the incoming McGuinty government came in, they had promised to buy it back. And then they kind of looked at the price tag and said, yeah, maybe we're not going to buy it back because it's really going to be really expensive. And you can't just tear up contracts. Well, that was their position. Even if, you know, this new highway, which will go from the 400 down to Halton, so it's not, compared with the 407, is about a quarter of the length. It's going to cost $6 billion compared to the $3 billion that the province earned from the 407 back in 2002, 2003, or whenever it was. 1999, actually. Unless the price to buy it back is something just beyond calculation, you would think it would be cheaper to buy back the 407 and to utilize that more fully than to build an entirely new highway.
I mean, that's one solution. I don't quote me on this. I remember reading somewhere that because of the pandemic, the highway is being far underutilized, because I mean, we're not commuting, we're staying home. The funny thing is, the 407 is a rich person's highway because the fees are so high on it. The only people who can drive on it are people who can pay the fees, or you have your business pay for you, which is what happened in my case. Those are the only people who drive it. You don't see families on it often, you don't see regular commuters on it. It's usually somebody with deep pockets is paying for it. And that's the thing. So, I mean, I was going off on a tangent there. But my point being was that there's talk of, there are stipulations in the contract that the 407, they must keep a certain demand of ridership on the highway. And if they don't, they tend to default on the contract, is my understanding of the wording. Don't quote me on it. But they're at risk of defaulting on it because of the lack of people driving on the 407. If I was a NDP or a Liberal Party member, I might be looking at that as a, you know what, forget it, too bad, so sad. We're not subsidizing any small businesses. We're sure as heck not going to subsidize some Dutch corp conglomerate to keep their hands on this highway. Tough.
Freely admit I'm doing research on Wikipedia here as we're doing the episode. Mike Harris said when the thing was built that the tolls would not rise by more than 30%, that they would be controlled. They've risen by 200% between when it was opened and 2015. From 10 cents to over 30 cents per kilometer. And I presume since 2015, they will have gone up some more. It's been a terrible deal. To an extent, it's almost academic because we just don't know at the moment if there's even going to be a need for any kind of highway. In the same manner that we've been used to after COVID.
I don't know about going up that high. Like the plans for building it are, it's really, really up there. I mean, that we are getting into Greenbelt cottage, not cottage country, but Greenbelt farmland, like really untouched green space just to build this highway. And I'm like, what's up there? Like, I guess you build it and you wait for stuff to develop, but that seems kind of against the point. Like you don't build a highway because you want to build up a city. You build a highway to serve a city. Yeah. So this idea, like,
just so for people listening from home, I mean, I think I said on Tuesday, it goes from Vaughan down to the 403, basically at around Milton. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's far north of Vaughan. It's a good distance up there. According to, I mean, no, none of the maps are final, but you know, you're talking kind of King City area. The suspicion is that it's exactly, they're putting it where they want to open up areas to developers. I mean, that's a suspicion, and I know it sounds like we go on about developers all the time, but every story we do, they come into it looking to do that.
What honestly strikes me is, like, this honestly goes back to, you know, I want to say, like, we kind of don't have anyone to blame but ourselves, because we, back in the election, you know, Doug Ford got caught behind closed doors promising to all these developers, I'm going to tear up the Greenbelt and you guys are going to be able to develop up the wazoo. And if you look at his government's track record since then, they've slowly been trying to carve up the Greenbelt for developers. The problem was they got caught that time, so he had to say, oh no, we're not going to revoke the Greenbelt Act. But they tried to offload the blame to municipalities, and that backfired on them because municipalities said, well, we don't want to carve up the Greenbelt. We love the Greenbelt. Keep the Greenbelt. Well, that didn't work out. So what do? Okay, they go into conservation authorities, as we had on earlier, and revoke their abilities to, you know, protect our watersheds and our waterways. That's, you know, and then these municipal zoning permits that the ministries or ministerial zoning permits that they're throwing down are seemingly arbitrarily for projects that don't really need it. It's part of the solution. And then this, oh, we're going to build a highway. Well, for who? And, you know, there's no clamoring demand. There's no thirst for this. It is confusion. The only people who are anxious to build it are the construction companies and the developers and the rich land owners who own the land that this highway is going to be going through.
There's a quote that has become somewhat fashionable to cite in the last few years, but I'm not going to let that stop me citing it right now, by Maya Angelou. When someone tells you who they are, believe them the first time. And it got used in regard to Trump, that if someone tells you that they think assaulting women is okay, believe them. Mm-hmm. That they are monsters. When someone gets caught on a microphone saying we're going to rip up the Greenbelt, believe them that that's what they meant, and they're going to do it, and they're going to do it in the way that politicians do it, incrementally denying that they're doing it all the time, while it's actually happening in front of our eyes. In terms of policies that this provincial government has pursued, I mean, what significant policies have they had that are truly and entirely theirs and that make a significant impact on our lives? Well, they cancelled a lot of things. So they cancelled basic income, they cancelled the Green Energy Act. And it was like you were saying the other day, fine. They had those kind of in their platform, although their platform was fairly empty. They kind of ran on that. But this, in terms of things that they've actually done, that they have introduced, it's all comes back to development, opening up the highway, making it easier to build, doing whatever, you know, doing things that directly benefit donors. And I don't think that's a controversial point or, it's just really obvious what's going on.
It is. And that's what I guess again, it comes back to blame on us. You know, we the people elected them into power. You're right. They didn't have a platform in terms of a vision of, hey, at the end of 4 years, what do you want Ontario to look like? They just said, oh, we're going to open it up for business. Well, we haven't exactly had a lot of business knocking down the door to set up factories and headquarters here in Ontario. You're right. I think it comes down to the developers and the landowners got together and bought themselves a Tory government, and the Tory government feels that they owe these guys some favors. It's frustrating. It's maddening, because the last thing I want is for ground to be broken on this highway. And quite frankly, I don't know if there's no plans to keep it in public hands. They could turn it into a toll highway and then sell it off to another conglomerate, maybe a conglomerate of landowners or land developers who are going to, fleece us for 200% markup after the ink's dried. This is kind of how conservative governments work. This is a bad use of tax dollars. It's a bad use of public land. It is a bad, bad idea.
Yeah, it is a terrible idea. And I think, this is where it gets so frustrating that we have the political system we have, where, what's the percentage? 60%, over 60% of voters voted for parties that were completely opposed to this. It used to be that every party in Ontario pretty much was a highway building party. Right. That's not the case anymore. The parties that can clearly control the majority of the votes in the province of Ontario are all unanimous in, I'm 99.9% sure that the NDP are on board with this too. I'd have to actually go and check, but are pretty much unanimous in saying this is not the right way to go. And yet we have this government that is can do this because they managed to get enough angry white middle-aged dudes to vote for them.
I'm not sure I go that far. I just think it's a party that has no imagination. Your point of every party used to be the highway building party, and that has changed because our needs have changed, our priorities have changed. Climate change is real. The question is, how do we curb it? You mentioned the Green Energy Act beforehand. You're right. This party canceled the Green Energy Act and tore down all these windmills and canceled all these windmill projects because of NIMBYism. The people in the ridings said, we don't want the windmills. And they said, okay, people have spoken. We don't get it. But for some reason, the people speaking against this highway, well, we don't know what we're talking about. I find it's, double standard there. But the fact, I look at, again, we're stepping a way outside the boundaries of a highway, but look at the cancellation of the Keystone pipeline in the States. The culture, the economy is shifting. We're going away from fossil fuels, the traditional models that these conservatives relied on. The economy is shifting towards a greener, more sustainable one. Electric vehicles are the way of the future. Mass transit is the way of the future, providing cheap, affordable mass transit options for people in major urban centers will be the key to urban growth in the 21st century, if it hasn't already happened. We need governments that understand this and are going to sit down and think of more creative solutions to these problems than just, we got to build another highway. Because here's the thing. If you build the 413 highway, it's going to fill up in a few years, and then we're going to be stuck with, we need another highway, except who would want to drive up that far? It's not going to do us any good. It's not going to serve our needs. It's just going to be another couple billion dollars down the tubes. We need better leaders for these problems.
Yeah, I think we as a nation, actually not just we as a nation, we as citizens of the world, to be honest. I mean, this is probably me being ridiculously idealistic. I get that, but this world where politicians from all parties will, if you follow what they're saying on the television, if you read their tweets, if you read the press releases, I was just reading the press releases from the opposition parties yesterday about supporting the sick pay, you know, basically they're all saying to each other, unanimous, we need to get together and cooperate to get this done. And yet they send letters to each other in public, taking shots at each other, trying to show that the other one's not a team player. It's like, grow up, guys. If you actually wanted to get this done, if you actually wanted to cooperate together and make a statement about everybody unifying against this god-awful government, you wouldn't be firing letters at each other in public where you're basically insulting each other. You would be picking up the phone and saying, hey, Andrea, or hey, Stephen, let's actually do something, you know, for the good of the province. That doesn't happen. And it's so disheartening because we get nowhere, you know. I'm not saying anything that the people don't know, but it does seem like there's this disease. As someone who's been deeply involved in party volunteering and party politics, I sat on the executive of the Ontario Liberal Party briefly, who's been there, it's still, and sat beside people who are really good, smart people who are really trying to do good things, but it's still the case that they will go home and tweet some tedious piece of nonsense about whatever. I can't be bothered to think of an example. That just insults their intelligence, basically. And just, you know, it's like, treat people with enough intelligence that they might be able to understand ideas like induced demand. The Conservatives assume that's far too complicated a subject for anybody to really grasp. We need roads. That's the sum total of the argument. Well, the mistake that the progressive parties have made, I often feel, is in falling for that same thing too. So they just shout up, no, we don't need roads. Well, that's not a debate. That's a slanging match. And I think it's part of the reason people are so sick and tired of politics very often, that people, you know, try me for size. Maybe I'll understand the more complex argument. Or at least don't assume I'm an idiot. I know that there are party volunteers, if any of them are listening to this, probably rolling their eyes and going, yeah, grow up. You two have been inside the belly of the beast to an extent, to a large extent, and you've seen this. And it's like, you know the games that are played. You know that there are things that are not said to the volunteers because it doesn't make sense to say it to the volunteers. And there are policy conventions and things that are completely meaningless and completely pointless, which we should put on to keep people happy and feel like they're involved. And it's all a circuitous game of nonsense, and we need to get over it.
You have a good point there. I find that the solutions to our traffic woes in the 905 region are not easily solved. To give Kathleen Wynne credit, she said, I will tackle it. I don't think she succeeded, mostly because I think the solution is honestly a multi-term solution. Like if Doug Ford said, I'm going to solve the transportation issues, and he said, nope, phase one is we're going to expand. I don't know what the solution would be, but if you just say we're going to build a solution, whether that means more trains, more bus routes, tear down some of the silos between the municipalities so we can get better transit between them so people can get around better. Whatever the case may be, there's no one solution. It's not just, well, we build a highway, therefore we solve the transportation problems. You're not. You just postponed it another 10 years. And then the only solution to that is, well, you got to build another highway. The problem is eventually you run out of places to build highways. What we could be doing right now is looking at increased frequency on GO lines, if that's one part of the solution. Again, it's not the entire solution. HOV lanes is one. I think a bigger one is putting incentives for companies to keep their people at home. We are seeing that people are able to be a productive working from home. If you find a way to have companies maybe start selling off their big, gigantic towers or office spaces in Toronto or in Mississauga and Brampton and say, no, we're going to, you know, we only need one floor. The rest of the time, everybody works from home. Maybe there's incentives on the tax bills for businesses, for them to do that. There are a variety of solutions out there. If you just sit down and you say, let's think about this, what can we do? You can get it done, and probably for a lot cheaper than $6 billion that you'll probably have to repeat in 10 years.
Yeah. I I won't give them credit for it, but I'll give them credit for not being as bad as they could have been. The investments that the Liberal government made in GO Transit, I believe, are still going ahead. The electrification of the Lakeshore line, so we should end up with 15-minute service, which I think will be transformational. I think the previous government could have been a lot more innovative with basically saying, why are we expecting people to get on trains again? Why are we expecting them to get in cars? And sure, trains are better than cars, but neither is best of all. We have this thing called the internet now. We've had it since the mid-90s that lets you work from home. Not everybody. Obviously, we need to get food delivered and infrastructure, and a huge amount of stuff still needs to travel. But the stuff, I always think, the Conservatives used to be the party of efficiency.
Right.
It's like, don't spend a penny unless you really need to. Well, this is, $6 billion or $600 billion pennies being spent that it doesn't seem like they really need to be spent. And I also think that's the way that you could maybe sort of sell green economics to Conservatives. It's like, it's not, okay, maybe you don't like the trees and you're happy for us to cut the trees down. Think of it in terms of efficiency, of not wasting things. If we have a resource, mm-hmm. protecting it for as long as we can, because that resource has an inherent value to it. I feel that progressives have done a really bad job of arguing back against the sheer level of dumbness of argument that the right comes up with. I mean, we saw this with Trump. He would say something completely insane and manifestly just utter garbage, and then you see people arguing back against it. It's like, well, I'm not sure arguing back is really worth your while.
The problem with progressives is we take the bait way too easily.
Yeah, exactly.
The minute anybody, not just Trump, any loudmouth with a bullhorn on the right, it's the whataboutism arguments that always come out. Well, what about this? And then we say, oh, well, we got to talk about, let's talk about the efficiency, and it's not going to cost that much. We don't need highways. And are you against highways? No, I'm not against highways. Then you should be against for the 413. And you like, no, what you're arguing for is better use of tax dollars to get the right objective. We know, to bring it kind of full circle, we know we build this 413 highway. It may alleviate the congestion for 5-10 years maybe, but the problem is population increases, and what happens? Oh, we need another highway. The problem is I don't see a 414 highway even further north, because at that point I'm like, you might as well just build me a highway to cottage country, which is the 400.
Yeah, I well exactly I I really feel COVID is the turning point on the whole commuting thing. Because for years now, I've simply not understood. Now, I worked for a company briefly in 2004, 2005, maybe, in North York. And I commuted all the way from Burlington to North York by transit, which is, you know, I think it took me 2 hours each way. And you know, it was a temporary job, so I was willing to do it short term. But you know, I went all that way to sit at a computer that was identical to the computer I had at home, and to just type stuff. And it's like, well, I'm only here because you don't trust me to work at home. Can you not think of a better way of checking that I'm working than making me go through this ridiculous nonsense? And that was, you know, 15 years ago at least. And I think maybe we've broken that thing of, well, we can't trust people to actually work, because for the last year they've all been working and they've been working just fine. And I know, certainly purely anecdotally, I know of three, well, I think I've heard of three companies, two companies seriously considering not renewing leases for property, and one place that, you know, a major employer in Hamilton that, basically polled its staff to say, you know, do you want to, when this is over, do you want to come back? And the overwhelming response was no, we're fine, we'll carry on working at home. And I think that's a, you know, there are people who like going to the office. I think, as you were saying, I think on Tuesday, you know, you can have a bit of both. You can, I think the reality of the situation is like you'll have the Monday meeting, or you'll have to go in to meet so-and-so, or maybe you want to go and have lunch on Friday, or but you don't go in every day. It's a more flexible arrangement, and that makes perfect sense. And it's healthier for human beings. It's healthier for families. Mm-hmm. And it's massively more healthy for the environment.
Absolutely. And you know, it would be nice if this government kind of embraced that idea and saw itself as kind of maybe an encourager or facilitator of that transition. Because I think it can. Like you can find all sorts of incentives through tax code and giving tax breaks to businesses that say, yeah, you know, we're going to trim back our costs. You know, all these ways to save the money. Save them on payroll tax
Imagine how popular the government would be that as well as giving some breaks to businesses that encourage working from home. Mm-hmm. But also, and I know they've actually done this during COVID, but to do it permanently, so okay, you're working from home, you can deduct a percentage of your hydro bill forever because you're working at home, just like I do, because I'm self-employed. I can do that. And it's just the normal way of doing things. We'll just let everybody do that. Boy, that would win you some votes, I would have thought. You know, it would be encouraging really good, healthy practices.
Well, I mean, that comes back to our point, is that we're just, the entire root of this problem has just been a lack of imagination. I mean, in the last, 15 minutes, you and I have come up with a whole slew of different ways to approach the economy. And we are not the two brightest tools in the shed, let me tell you. But
guilty.
It just seems like let's just dust off the top memo. And the reason why I think the only ones who really benefit from this are developers and the landowners of the proposed area. That's who benefits. I don't see a huge benefit to me. It's $6 billion that could be spent on better uses. I think I'd leave it at that for now, I'm afraid.
Well, thanks everybody for tuning in today, and we'll be back on Tuesday with what promises to be a really interesting episode that you'll want to tune into. We'll see you then.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's it for this episode of the 905er. Thank you for listening. As always, you can send us your feedback, thoughts, and concerns, or ideas for future episodes to our email,
info@905er.ca. We'd love to hear from you. You can help us keep the 905er going by financially supporting us through Patreon as well as PayPal. Visit us at 905er.ca and click on the support tab. As well, links are in the show notes for your convenience. Lastly, you can find us on social media. Search for the_905er on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. So long for now. See you next time.
Hey listeners, I'm Christy.
And I'm Melissa, and this is Buried Motives, where we dig deep into the details of some of the most gruesome
dirtbag murderers. She said she enjoyed hurting things that can't fight back.
And that is a disturbing view into the mind of a murderer. And such a dirtbag.
Yeah, that's not even strong enough words. This is totally a recipe for disaster. And not to justify whatever is going to happen, but you can totally understand and see how this would be in the works.
If you were only to look at what she did later on and not know any of that history, she would appear like off the wall crazy.
Oh, 100%. Because we're not even close to getting to the end yet. But you can just see this pattern and all this kind of stuff developing in her, which is what we're here for. We're digging deep.
Join us each Thursday as we unearth the dirt bags that live among us
and the motives buried there. Hope you join us as we exhume the truth.